We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University of
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, so don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
All right, welcome in to another BuzzBeat podcast. This will be another preview of the 2023 NBA draft. Another draft, another prospects episode. I'm Brian. I will be once again joined by Lee today as we're going to go through four returning prospects that are going to be returning to college basketball for either their second or third season, or I guess in the case of one of the guys, a fifth season of college basketball. And really excited to get into these guys. I've really enjoyed going through some of these draft prospects with Lee so far this season. Hope you guys are as well. Again, please continue to give us feedback, prospects you'd like to see covered, sort of topics you'd like to see touched on. We know we're getting ahead of things a little bit. It's not really draft season, but never too early to start. And so, yeah, we're going to just keep rolling with these things. We will say the next draft pod that comes after this one, we're excited. It's not totally hashed all the way out yet, but we do think we're going to have Richie join us on that one for the production aspect. We're hoping to do a video podcast on Scoot Henderson, one of the 1A, 1B, one of the top two prospects for the draft, who's heading into his second season with G League Ignite. So very excited for that coming up. So keep an eye on that. But before we get to the prospects today, before we get to Scoot Henderson, Lee, coming from a new undisclosed location here in Raleigh, probably not too far from where I'm situated, actually. But how are you doing, my man? How are things?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm hoping that this new proximity is going to maybe help our connection, help our chemistry a little bit,
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you might even have an in-person at one of these days. I mean, why not, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, look, it's always draft season on the BuzzBeat right. Pod, and I am also excited that we are getting into obviously returners so far, and we'll start with Scoot at some point next week. We'll probably at some point do Victor as well. I would think
We'll have to do Wembanyama at some point as well. Who's a guy that I have seen probably play a handful of games. Granted, some in FIBA U19, but
yep.
We're excited to get to that. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. And I don't know when this podcast will release, but at the time of this recording, we did put up another pod that came out earlier this week that I recorded with Spencer Percy and, of course, Richie. That one was previewing the schedule for the Charlotte Hornets the day after the schedule drop from the NBA for the upcoming season. And we also did sort of like an expansion team type protection draft for eight players on the Hornets roster. Would also like to wish a belated happy birthday to LaMelo Ball.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyways, with that in mind, let's jump right on in, and we're going to start with a guy that is returning for his second season Had a nice freshman year playing for Pepperdine. That would be one Maxwell Lewis, Max Lewis in the eyes of some. And I would even say in recent weeks, he sort of created a bit of a buzz because Pepperdine went on their once every 4 year international trip that various men's and women's college programs are allowed to do to get some scrimmages in, get some exhibition games in, get some extra practice in, and some travel. And Lewis played quite well, or at least put up some highlights in those games. There was one dunk I saw him throw down that was absolutely nasty. But 6'7", 195 pounds, definitely a little skinny, but long, rangy wing, good frame, and you know, the kind of frame where it looks like it's projectable. He should be able to add weight, it'll fill out. And again, with the length, with the explosion, the functional athleticism, is someone that I do think projects well physically to the next level, assuming he's able to add again a little bit more power. Let's start here. Now that we touched on, you know, the athleticism very, very briefly, and Lee, feel free at any point in time to comment and chime in here. But I would just I'll start off with what I think is sort of the most intriguing part of Lewis's game, is like the off dribble creation and the handle for Lewis at that size. The handle needs to tighten up. It's loose. There are some games. One of the game he played, he only played in one of the matchups against Gonzaga this season in the WCC. But you could tell some of the smaller guys from Gonzaga were able to kind of get inside his jersey and bother him. And once he loses that inside leverage, he can be, you know, a bit of a turnover machine at times this past season. So that is something to monitor. 22.3% turnover rate. Not all of that is like getting ripped or whatever, but that is something to monitor. I do think that the handle is not quite as functional as maybe you'd like for it to be. However, he will try some absolutely wild stuff with the basketball in terms of shot creation. Come off the bench and on the first touch, you know, step back, 3-point attempt.
He's not shy. He's not shy.
Definitely not shy. And there's some legitimate space creation within those step back maneuvers, the crossover combo moves. With, you'll even see him try wild stuff like a behind the back gather, going downhill into a runner, you know, coming out of isolation, attacking closeout or out of pick and roll. I don't know if I totally buy into it at this moment, but I would say it's maybe not a bad thing to bet on, because he does some pretty intriguing, creative, patient stuff. Come off a pin down, isolate, ball fake, get into a step back game, create space and take a jump shot. He can make guys miss with multiple fakes, handle maneuvers, and all package it into, you know, one quick touch possession. So there are times where I do think he gets a little sticky with the basketball. He'll put his head down over dribble. He'll put himself in a bad spot. He'll miss easy passes and then force a challenging pass for a turnover. So the process is not always great. And it will also result in him taking some just wild off-dribble 3-point attempts. It is kind of funny at times to monitor, if you can, if the Pepperdine bench is in the shot when Lewis is kind of getting into his one-on-one or pick and roll 3-point attempts, and it's early in the shot clock or it's in transition or whatever. It's just funny to kind of monitor the Pepperdine coaching staff, because while I think they are encouraging of him, and certainly this is a guy that put up a usage rate of almost 30% this past season. So they weren't asking him to be shy, but there are times where you can just see them, if they have hair still, kind of tugging at it a little bit, maybe pulling it out. So,
To that point, BG, like, three of their best six players were freshmen. So yeah. I think that was just kind of the growing pains altogether with this Pepperdine team, but talented, like young and talented.
I mean, they're going to be a team to watch in the WCC next season, in part because of Lewis, in part because of Houston Millett, who is one of the best shooters in the country, one of the best shooting prospects for next season's draft. That's also on that Pepperdine roster. And Mike Mitchell, I think, is the name of the point guard, who is also was mistake prone this past season, but definitely has some talent. But with Lewis and Millett, they've got two of the best prospects returning in the country on that Pepperdine team, coached by none other than Lorenzo Romar. As far as the shot goes, last thing that I'll mention in here, then Lee, I'll let you take over. But high release point, has some nice touch on the shot, and the versatility is pretty legit. Shoots it from a bunch of different levels, can create for his own shot out of isolation, out of post-ups, you play make in the mid-post. Is a guy that can really come off pin downs and make plays coming off down screens. That's something I'd like to touch on a little bit more before we finish up on Lewis. So I like the shot, and I see kind of the creation upside with that 6'7" frame and the long arms. So I'm intrigued by Lewis, the athleticism, the ranginess, and betting on that shot creation and the shot itself. And this is a guy that I think could sneak into, or maybe not quite there yet, but could sneak in his way into becoming a first-round prospect sooner rather than later. So before we sort of talk about defense and some other aspects, Lee, why don't you get in here on Maxwell Lewis?
Yeah, well, I'm glad we started off with him, because I do feel like, at least from my perspective, I feel like he has the most volatile outcome potentially of all four of these prospects. Like, you could convince me, like, you could pretty easily convince me that Maxwell Lewis needs to come back for his junior year. You could also probably convince me that Maxwell Lewis becomes like a top 30 pick. And I think anytime you're dealing with this, like, the physical profile, like you said, he's 6'7", like, lengthy wing with guard skills that shot the ball pretty efficiently. His season was cut short a little bit. I think he played 21 games in his freshman year, but he shot 36% from three on, like, you know, four attempts a game, like pretty decent volume. It wasn't like he was just a you know, shoot it here or there guy. Like you mentioned, when he got in, he was raring to go to score the basketball. He was an 80% free throw shooter too. So, like, he just has a pretty mature, like you said, kind of a elongated high release jump shot. With great arc, with great touch. So anytime you're dealing with a 6'7" efficient jump shooter that also, like, when he gets out into the open court, you know, obviously he's 6'7" and lengthy, so that helps, but he throws down. I mean, this dude, you know, will windmill in the open floor. He can be pretty disruptive in the passing lanes at times, when he's, like, gambling intelligently. So when you mix, like, the length, the athleticism, the height, and the shooting, like, just with that, you're already talking about a guy who has to at least be in the conversation as, like, an NBA prospect. You know, 11 points, 3 rebounds in his freshman year. He did, like you alluded to, Brian, he was doubled up on turnovers to assists. So, you know, you like to see guards go 2-1 on their turnover ratio. He was 1-2, which is the opposite of what you want. So I think he does have a long way to go in terms of kind of playmaking for others. Obviously, you mentioned his weight. He's definitely on the light side. And there's just a lot of uncertainty around him. I mean, you know, we basically saw him for a little over half of a freshman year. The efficiency is encouraging, but, like, what can he build on? Because one of the things I have in my notes, and I'll kind of use this as a way to kick it back to you, is under kind of like his pro list, like his pros for me, was isolation creation in small spaces. So, like, if he catches it on the wing in isolation against a defender, as you mentioned, he's got some nice kind of jab series, jab, go the other way, quick step back, create space, pull up. Like, he loves that move. He's got a nice just kind of, like, put it on the floor, dribble, pull up stuff. That's all solid and, like, shows some really nice, I would say even, like, more than flashes. Like, he shows that a good bit. Where he gets in trouble, I think, and where he's going to have to progress, either becoming, like, a very good defender or being able to put it on the floor for more than, you know, more than two dribbles and create for others. Because right now he's a turnover machine. He doesn't create for others. Although in those small isolation spaces, he does have creation ability. And that's super valuable at his size and length.
Yeah, well said on Lewis. I agree with you in terms of the one-on-one creation. Being able to get into the mid-range and do it too is interesting for a guy that got up over 12 three-point attempts per 100 possessions this season. The numbers are just kind of interesting with him. Not super efficient, 29.5% usage rate, which is huge for a guy that had a sub 23% free throw attempt rate, but 3% block rate, 3.3% steal rate, 8 dunks, shot almost 64% at the rim with a fair amount of like self-created attempts. And then Lee touched on the 3-point volume and the free throw efficiency. So it's a smaller sample, but he does strike me as a guy that has watched. Maybe it's because he's a West Coast guy and he's wearing the number 24, but he strikes me as a guy that's watched some Paul George film at some point in his life. And that really stands out to me when I see him coming off.
I like that.
When I see him coming off down screens, like he's not, at this point, I don't think of Maxwell Lewis as a guy you're just going to give him, I don't know, a 2 dozen pick and roll attempts per game or, whatever, a dozen pick and, it's maybe a handful or whatever, but he can really make plays and make reads coming off those down screens. One of the nicest passes I've seen him throw was the game against Gonzaga that he played. He came off a weak side pin down, kind of caught it in the mid-range area going to his left. He caught it, he jabbed left, and then immediately dribbled right. Two of the Gonzaga guys, the chase defender, and I think it was probably Drew Timmy, because I don't think Holmgren would have bit like this. But both, maybe it was Anton Watson. I think it was Timmy. But both guys go with him, and he just instantly, this just beautiful pocket pass as he's almost fading out of bounds to his teammate for a layup at the rim. Very impressive. So he's a guy that can kind of, I think, create passing windows. And use his size, use his touch as a passer, and use his creativity. Like, the turnover rate's obviously not great, and some of the self-inflicted errors are disappointing, but I like that he takes chances. And for a guy his size that moves like that, I think that's the thing you're trying to bet on, is the frame, the athleticism, the movement, and the creativity as a guy that can either make plays for others or use it to get to a shot. Can give you some mid-range scoring, can get to the rim a little bit, and again has some like pretty special shot making tendencies that we'll see how it looks. So hopefully over the course of a full season this year, but Lewis is a guy to keep an eye on. I know it might be tough, especially for people that aren't super plugged into the draft or aren't going to stay up and watch a lot of Pepperdine games or catch those replays or whatever. But that does seem like a name to keep an eye on, and yeah, you just, again, long wing that has some defensive upside. I would just real quickly, then we can move on to the next guy. I would just like to touch on his defense very briefly. With that length, he does have the ability to be a pest guarding certain players. I think his work as a chase defender is solid, like good work rate. He uses his length to deny passes. That would be a kick out, or again, when he's sort of like floating and guarding off ball movers coming off screen, just smooth and active in those situations. And I think just the responsiveness as a help defender is also solid. Hitting his weak side rotations, hitting his stunts against Gonzaga, hitting his stunts in some of the other games that I've seen him in, when teams get to pick and pops and stuff like that. The game, I watched one of the games against Pacific. They used a lot of zone. When he was the low man on the weak side in the zone, you could see him pointing stuff out, communicating, calling things, just kind of being active and alert in the back line. So we touched way more on the offense than the defense there, but it's not just the length and the athleticism. He does have some good traits on that side of the floor that make me a little bullish for him being not a stopper, but a guy that can give you some versatility and be an active and useful team defender too. So again, Lewis, the two-way upside is an interesting bet, and I will be fascinated to see. The first thing you said, Lee, was that it does feel like a little combustible. And yeah, if the three-point shot takes a step back, if the playmaking continues to sort of like plateau at creative, but more frustrating than successful, or however you want to describe that, I could see there being a depletion a little bit of his stock, but I think there's just a lot of room for upside here, and hoping to see it over the course of a full season.
And then my only final thoughts would be, one, like, Pepperdine just has been kind of an interesting program here under Romar for the last couple of years with, you know, Kessler Edwards and then this next, like, crop that is currently rising sophomores for them. And then the only other thing on Lewis is he is a little older than most rising freshmen. Like, he's already 20. So not that that, I mean, you know, 9 months, whatever, like, it's not a huge deal. I just think that's, it's at least worth noting that he'll probably be 21 when he's drafted as a sophomore if he comes out next year.
Nope. Great point.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, let's slide on to the next guy here. We're going from the West Coast to the Southeast, and we're sliding over to Ole Miss and
combo the Deep South.
Yeah, very much the Deep South. Oxford, Mississippi, the Grove, you guys. But yeah, Matthew Morrell, 6'4", 200-pound, two guard. Maybe you could label him a combo, but given how much he functioned as sort of an off-ball mover. He ran, you know, plenty of pick and roll this past season as well with Jarkel Joyner. And I'm blanking on Ruffin, I think is the name of the other guard who's
they got hurt.
But, you know, Ty Fagan, Luis Rodriguez are two other guys that, you know, played with the ball a little bit too. But certainly Jarkel Joyner, who's transferred up to NC State, is a neighbor of you and I now, Lee. And
he's a blur in the open floor too.
Yeah, playing with Terquavion Smith, who we touched on, the first college prospects pod that we did a couple of weeks ago. But Morrell, let's start as we like to with the athletic traits, the body type. In my eyes, explosive, quick leaper, even off of a live dribble. One of the games I went through or recently for Ole Miss and Morrell was the final game of the season they played against Missouri in the SEC tournament. And he had one of the nastiest half court dunks I think I've seen, just kind of, you know, the last couple of months going back through tape of this past season, where he got by his guy, just dusted his guy off the dribble. It was either one-on-one, pick and roll, whatever it was. He turned the corner, he got downhill, and he did it so quickly that on the back line for Missouri he's now at Arkansas, but at the time it was Trevin Brazil, one of the best help defenders, weak side rim protectors in the country, and is another guy that is a legit prospect for the 2023 draft, a guy that I think's really picked up steam. But Morrell just beats him to the rim, even though Brazil's the guy that's 6'10", 6'11". He's in good position. He's a pretty quick processor on the back line. But Morrell just got from the three-point arc to the rim in an instant. And he can jump too. He's an above the rim finisher, especially if he has a little bit of a runway, but it doesn't have to be in transition. Like, he can get it done in the half court. He really can heat up the rim at times. But my favorite part of Morrell's offense, and not to sort of, we just kind of went over some of this stuff with Lewis, but is his work as an off-ball mover on offense. I love him as a cutter. If defenders top lock or overplay on the denials when he's moving without the basketball, he's going to cut back door. It's the constant movement. It's not just the design screen usage, of which Ole Miss had a lot of that in their offense, but there's a lot of random cuts. There's relocations. And again, he can just puncture a defense when they kind of forget about him or overplay on him without a play being designed for him. And so, I really like his ability to just move without the basketball, either design looks or, again, sort of just in the flow of a possession or late clock when things are starting to tighten up and he's willing to cut diagonally or vertically or relocate and you know, play make off of that. Pretty impressive. Quick release with the jumper. Doesn't need much time or space to get it off. I'm very impressed with his ability to get his feet set, get square to the rim, and get off what I think is a rather aesthetically pleasing jump shot, big time 3-point range, coming off screens, down screens, pin downs, flares. Again, Ole Miss drew up a lot of stuff for him, and he had a big shooting jump this past season. His freshman year, 2 years ago, he shot under 30% from 3-point line. He shot under 34% on twos. He shot under 56%. From the free throw line. Well, as a sophomore, 75% from the line, 39% from downtown, with almost 92% of his 3-point makes being assisted, and shot 47.5% on twos, including plenty of unassisted finishes at the rim and unassisted finishes in the mid range. 9 dunks on the season, not a ton, but again, the ones he had were pretty special at times, and not just sort of like, you know, cheapies in the open court. For my money, though, one of the best movement shooters in the country, advanced screen usage, lethal coming off pin downs. If the chase defender isn't locked in, Morrell's movement, off-ball screen usage, he's just taking that guy out of the action. He's going to get open. And he just creates open looks time after time in these tight pockets of space when, you know, it seems like Ole Miss is sort of just kind of running through the motions of half-court offense, and then all of a sudden, bang. He's flying off of a staggered screen or a pin down. Beautiful 1-2 shot prep, footwork coming off those down screens, and really just explodes off the catch, gets off the floor, able to shoot over contest. You see even taller guys close out on him with decent timing. But again, because of his pop coming off the floor, because of his screen usage, he's kind of able to just shoot over guys, even against pretty good length. And that quick release doesn't hurt. But he's not just a shooter coming off those down screens. He'll look to pass. He'll look to get downhill. He'll curl and attack. He'll shot fake and drive, shot fake and pro hop. He loves using that little pro hop to get to the rim. And he'll also come off of one of those down screens and isolate and look to get to his mid-range game where he can hit pull-ups, he can hit a step back, or he can, again, try to pressure the rim and get downhill a little bit. So that versatility with him as an off-ball scorer, an off-ball mover, a guy that doesn't need a lot of time with the basketball to be pretty dangerous and set up other guys, I think is pretty special. So, Lee, I'll flip it over to you. What are your thoughts on the rising junior guard from the SEC?
Well, you may have just sold me, BG. I think you made the perfect case for him. I think, you know, one of the things that, to take it back to 2020, one of the things that I loved so, so much about Emmanuel Quickly was his ability to relocate into space. And that is something that Morrell does incredibly well. Like, just this kind of innate instinct to driver going baseline, slide to opposite corner, pick and roll on the other side of the court, slide into the open space on the opposite wing when his guy's tagging. Like, those little things that, you know, you may not notice unless you're really watching for it. And all of a sudden he's shooting like a wide open jumper where he shoots 38% from, by the way. And it's there's a little bit more behind the scenes going on there to how he is kind of manufacturing those wide open jump shots. He is a fantastic shooter. You said it perfectly, so I'll repeat it. An aesthetically pleasing jump shot. Like, it's just a pretty, pretty looking shot. He's also got, like you mentioned, the footwork. He's got really nice kind of like jab step footwork too. You know, pump fake, one-two dribble pull up, like rise up, knock it in. Love all that stuff. I just, in the notes I was saying, I just kind of like described him as this kind of mature, poised, never forces anything, gets things in the flow of the offense, a fantastic like down screen pin down reader that you mentioned, you know, and those are all like cerebral instinctual things for a basketball player to understand when you need to curl when a defender's trailing you, to understand when you need to fade when the defender's trying to cheat over the top. Like, reading those screens and popping or curling at the correct times is like the little tiny split second things that is the difference between an open shot and a contested shot. And he does really good stuff at that. Nice off ball mover. Again, like the intelligence. I think what will be interesting for him next year, obviously, like I wonder if, and you mentioned him as being kind of like a spot pick and roll player. I wonder if he'll be a little more involved now as like a little bit of a higher, and like, you wouldn't want him necessarily to become like a super high usage guy because of all those good qualities we just described on why he's so effective off the ball. But I do think if we're talking about NBA projection, I do think at some point you do want to see him become a little bit more effective as like an on the ball guy at times as well, which again, to like allude to Emmanuel quickly, like I always thought he had some uncovered like on-ball playmaking, which he's shown now, you know, after 2 years in the NBA. So I think he'll need a little bit of that because he, you know, he's not undersized, but he's not massive either. You know, we're talking like a 6'4" kind of combo two guard. And so he may be more featured this year. Like some of those, you know, you mentioned Joyner at NC State, obviously the other guard will be coming back from injury. So that'll be interesting too. High volume, I mean, shot 153s on the year. Just a fantastic shooter. I think for me, the concerns are, you know, can he do enough on the ball in a pinch as like a secondary or tertiary creator? Can he hold up defensively and can he create for others? You've seen some of these archetypes. Like I'd almost compare him. He's probably a better athlete than this guy, but like Tyshawn Alexander from Creighton a couple years ago, yeah. Like kind of cut out of that mold. And those guys are like, and I don't think we're advertising him as anything more than this, but like kind of a top 60 fringe guy, like floating around. But if all of a sudden he's in a more featured role this year and shows a little bit more on the ball, you know, you might start talking about him as a top 50, 45 type guy. So that's kind of where I see him.
Yeah, I like the Alexander comp. You know, one of those best case scenarios is it like Courtney Lee type? You know what I mean?
Totally.
You were sort of in that the undersized combo two guard, but gonna need to show you to be able to actually, you know, be a guy that the teams would use as like an off ball mover in the NBA. You've got to give other stuff for that to actually be like playable and scalable or whatever. But again, the awareness is good. Like, he's just a heads up player, makes nice passes in transition or in scramble situations, or when he's asked to flash the nail against the zone defense, he just makes the right plays consistently. I don't think he like needs a ball screen to get around guys. Like, he can beat guys off the dribble, even if that's sort of not his primary mode of usage. But he can look for his own offense or work as a facilitator off the ball screen too. Again, he didn't got like a fair number, but not like a ton of pick and roll volume. And certainly like Ruffin will be like the main pick and roll guy for Ole Miss next season. But Morrell, I think, is in line to get more of it. And I'm curious to see how that looks. But if you watch enough games, you will see him make some pretty impressive passes out of the pick and roll. I know some people kind of like to write off the weak side skip, in part because people like Lee or myself, we talk about it because it looks cool and it travels the way and it's impressive, but maybe you're not having to like really read that many components. You know what I mean? As that's happening. I still think it's rather impressive, but maybe it's not the most sort of like advanced multi-layered read or whatever, but he can hit a skip. Like absolutely. You know, he can be with the ball in the slot and find a guy weak side in the deep corner. If the defense is not like where it needs to be rotating on the backside, or if they're a little loose on the backside, if those connections aren't there, if that's not crisp, like he'll pick out guys and put it on the money as a passer. The flashes with the pick and roll passing, I think, were pretty impressive this year. Lee, you brought up the size. It's a little bit of a concern. You know, he's listed at 6'4", so he's probably, you know, 6'2.5", 6'3", whatever. So, you know, he'll have to lean into the athleticism and lean into being a pest a little bit, and maybe he can guard one or two positions on the next level. But look, he will get in a stance and slide his feet. And I do think he's strong in his upper body, and he does move laterally. So there's some chance for him to be a guy that can give you some punch at the point of attack.
And that's the other path for him, right? Like if some of the other stuff doesn't come along, it's become a great point of attack defender.
I think he's there as a team defender and a guy that rotates. He's very active. There was one of the games I was watching the other day where he broke up a lob. Kept crashing. It was a pick and roll lob play, and he came out of the corner, and I think he got whistled for a foul, but it was one of those like very impressive and just sort of very in terms of court awareness and having the athleticism to actually like react to that, I thought was rather impressive. So I kind of like where he is as a backside helper, but the lack of size is, again, is a bit of a limiting factor in all of these departments, save for maybe the point of attack, assuming the strength is able to translate. But I don't think he's like, he's not skinny nor is he weak. I think at times the strength shows up, but at the end of the day, you know, 200 pounds is 200 pounds. So I think I'm finished with Morrell. Are you ready to move on to another Matthew, or do you, anything else you'd like to add in here?
No. Yeah. Let's keep the Matthew trend going. A player that most any even casual college basketball fan should be familiar with, because it is his fifth year in the NCAA, a former national champion, Matthew Meyer. Fifth year, I'm assuming grad transfer. I'm assuming he graduated probably maybe twice at Baylor at this point.
He was there for a while, man.
Yeah, he'll be in Champaign at Illinois this season. 6'9", 225 pounds. Had his most involved role this season at Baylor, averaged, you know, 10 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, and an assist, and a steal, and nearly a block. So kind of was one of those guys that at his size, with his skill, contributed in a ton of different ways. His shooting splits this year were 40, 70, 32, but it was like by far his biggest volume shooting year in his 4 years at Baylor. It's weird because, you know, it seems like he's been around forever because, you know, his first 3 years in Baylor, it was a more limited role, but like he played as a freshman. So, you know, it feels like he's been around. Big wing with size, with awesome guard skills. Like Meyer will break you down, you know, at 6'9". He'll kind of get the hips down, get the shoulders down, hit you with a couple crossover combinations, try and get to the rim. He's like a unafraid, unapologetic kind of like offensive spark plug, and a creative, like a creative player, a creative scorer. Obviously, he's been in a, you know, incredibly winning program at Baylor under Scott Drew, capped off by the title 2 years ago, and will, you know, theoretically, conceivably kind of be in maybe a little bit of like a playmaking role at Illinois, potentially with more usage and less of a supporting cast member like he was specifically to Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler, obviously, for multiple years at Baylor. I think before kicking it over to you, Brian, I think what I'm concerned about with Meyer is kind of this overall like development arc. Like I mentioned, as he was like, you know, he was on the scene as a freshman. Like he wasn't in a massive role, but he was in the rotation as a freshman and showed these like playmaking flashes that he still has. And I kind of felt like in his 4 years at Baylor that he didn't quite improve as rapidly as I thought he might initially, if that makes sense. Now, he did become more efficient in his sophomore and junior year in a supporting role again with NBA guards on his team. So like he shot upper 30s from three in his sophomore and junior year, and then he dipped back down again as a senior at 32%. Again, albeit on higher volume. So I think that's like a very fair caveat. His biggest jump production-wise came between his sophomore and junior year, where he went from like being just a kind of 12-minute-a-game guy, 5 points, a couple rebounds, to being like truly solidified in the rotation and still coming off the bench, but providing a bit more scoring. So I've just kind of always been a little bit, I guess, frustrated in a way that he didn't ever like fully pop. Like he always like slightly improved, I think. He just never had this big coming out year where he like improved 15% and just completely became a prospect. That may happen this year. I'm not saying it won't. I know that's a little more like meta and a little more like big picture. It's just something that's always bothered me with him a little bit. That being said, I think he's a very real prospect. I'm fascinated to see what he does at Illinois in a different system, in a different location. Because sometimes that's all you need is just a different situation to truly like become the full version of yourself. So we'll see if that happens. Go ahead, BG.
Yeah, I mean, that Illinois team is, I think, going to be pretty fascinating to watch. The backcourt has turned over. Obviously, we saw Andre Corbello left. So the team that the backcourt that we were used to from a couple of years ago is just, you know, Trent Frazier is gone. So it's a different look. But the front court is pretty awesome for Illinois with Meyer, Terrence Shannon Jr., who's another veteran prospect, fourth-year guy that left Texas Tech and went to Illinois, and Coleman Hawkins, who...
Sorry, BG, before, like Shannon Jr. and Meyer, they complement each other so perfectly.
It's incredible. I mean, they have, it's amazing that Illinois has, along with Coleman Hawkins, who's a fringy, I mean, he needs to get stronger, but is sort of like a prospect at the 4-5 for them. But they've added these two veteran wing forwards, you know, NBA sized wings that have been a part of two, you know, roughhouse Big 12 programs, you know, combined nine, you know, only what, 8 years of college basketball experience. So those were two huge gets. NIL was a big boon for Brad Underwood in Illinois this season. But yeah, as far as Meyer goes, like the development arc, you brought it up. It's interesting. I mean, who knows? Maybe it would have been fascinating to have seen him at Baylor this past year, if not for the arrival of Jeremy Sohan and Kendall Brown, who then came in to being the two big playmaking wings.
And Akinjo, yeah.
Akinjo, totally. Who just... too much with him with the basketball this past year for my liking, at least. And there were certainly some good lineups with Sohan as like a small ball five. But Meyer's interesting. I think because he did shoot a fair number of threes, I do think there was some rep that he was like a pure stretch four, right? And even in our neck of the woods here in ACC country, as UNC was going after him this past year, sort of thinking he might be the de facto Brady Manick replacement, there was a lot of buzz kind of around the triangle and Tobacco Road. You know, Brady Manick, he's the next stretch four. And it's like, that's not really like who he is. Like he can shoot threes, but he's not just like a movement guy. You brought up some of the creation flashes. The pull-up shooting numbers this past season weren't great. Like almost, they're only 37% effective shooting off pull-ups, but smooth stroke, high release. Like he's more of a wing forward to me than he is a pick and pop big guy. You know what I mean? So he can do some
totally
of that
agree.
Stuff, but
totally
he wants
agree.
To play with the ball a little bit more. It is interesting that, you know, his minutes jumped this season, but the usage drops down from almost 25 to 21%. The free throw attempt rate drops down to under 21%. The assist rate, under 8.5%. I think some of that, again, speaks to there were a lot of mouths to feed and very good, you know, guys like Akinjo and Adam Flagler, but also just having elite talent elsewhere with Sohan and especially, but also Kendall Brown to a, you know, a lesser extent. So I'm curious to see what it looks like with Meyer. He's going to be very good this season for Illinois. He tested the NBA draft waters this past season, decided to come back. I hope I wasn't maligning his sort of off-ball usage just a minute ago. I don't think of him as a pure pick and pop guy. And I thought the comparisons to Brady Manek were kind of laughable in these parts because he's a like shaggy,
completely different player,
shaggy haired white guy from the Big 12 that shoots threes, you know?
Exactly.
But he moves well without the ball. He's a good cutter. He doesn't remain stagnant when he's off the basketball. He'll cut in from the corner, he'll cut in from the slot. According to Synergy, he shot 70% this past season on basket cuts. So I think Meyer is a solid prospect. He's older, and but he at this point, you have to say, like, to an extent, he is proven against very good competition in the Big 12, being a role player who could also play with the basketball a little bit and has, at least in terms of height and length, is NBA sized and, again, can play with the ball and shoot it from a couple different levels of the court. So interesting player, to say the least.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a good point, BG. Like, it's easy to make those comparisons because of physical appearance, but the very, very different players. I think of Meyer much more as a wing than I do a stretch four. So agreed there. All right, we good to move on to our last guy here?
Yeah, last guy.
All right, last guy. Personally, I think we probably saved the best for last here. Arthur Kaluma, rising sophomore at Creighton. 6'7", 230, you know, kind of built like a brick house. Averaged 10.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. Another young prospect that has his assist to turnover ratio flipped. Obviously going to have to hone that in a little bit. And probably wasn't as efficient as you'd like to see him. 44% from the field, 67% from the free throw line, and 26% from the three-point line. I will say with Kaluma, I think a lot of the attraction and some of the buzz is he certainly was developing, I think, at a pretty rapid pace late in the season. He did shoot a bit better from the three in conference play than he did overall. He was right around 31% in conference play from three. So you kind of see that starting to tick up a little bit. Some of my observations on this guy on the pro side, on the plus side, like a pretty like mind-boggling out of area rebounder, particularly on the defensive end of the court. Like, don't get me wrong, he'll fly in for some offensive rebounds too, but just an absolute glass cleaner defensively. Like, you know, one-handed snares, you know, rebounding in traffic, like four sets of arms going for the ball, and he just kind of emerges over the top, you know, grappling the basketball. And part of that is just because he has really good instincts. I mean, he fills the lane really well, running in transition, whether that's on the wing or down the middle of the floor, kind of as a rim runner in transition, whether that's kind of sliding and helping as a rotation help defender. I already mentioned kind of the strength that allows him to be a versatile defender. I'm like very sold and confident on him as a guy who can guard up the lineup. I'm sure a lot of people remember he had a massive game against Kansas in the tournament that Creighton ended up losing. You know, that game, it is indicative of what his like high-end outcome could be. I don't think it's necessarily the best game to watch to come away with like a full opinion of Kaluma because he just shot the hell out of the ball. But one thing that I think is a fair takeaway from that game is he guarded McCormick for a lot of that game and held up pretty well, you know? And so like his strength, his versatility, his ability to get vertical around the rim, like I think that's all pretty real. I do still have a little bit, like I think he can eventually be a guy who can switch and slide a little bit and not just get completely torched against guards and wings. I think I'm less sold on that, in the, at least this far into the process, than I am on his ability to guard up against a guy like McCormick. Plus athlete, nose for the ball, huge motor, like just plays hard as hell. And then just to hit on some of the cons that I see, and then to get your take on Kaluma BG, I think he is a pretty suspect off the dribble creator right now. Mm-hmm. You know, when he makes shots like he did in the Kansas game, he does have a really nice pump fake. Like he sells his pump fake with his like eyes and mouth and ball really well and can get into the lane and do that. But he kind of can lose the ball a little bit on some of his dribble stuff. But he does try. So like there are flashes of some off the dribble stuff. I mentioned the assist turnover ratio. He's not much of a playmaker for others right now. And he's just it's hard to explain because like he does have flashes of know-how off the bounce, but it also looks like really awkward at times too. And then I think the other big question mark is just the shooting. Like it improved towards the end of the year, but look, he still shot 26% from the three on the year. So like that's an outstanding question, and we'll see what happens in his sophomore year. Take it away, BG.
Yeah, I think with Kaluma, you're betting on the way you have to project the shot is you've got to go beyond the 3-point percentage. You've got to go even beyond the free throw percentage, which is not only 70 free throw attempts, just 67% shooting. So not a great indicator. He's been playing with the Ugandan national team.
Yeah.
In World Cup qualifying this summer, he's had some amazing performances, but he's also shooting in like the mid to upper 20s from downtown, albeit on higher volume and different type of shots. But 6'7", hybrid forward, good athlete, strong, sturdy, low base, quick, physical. You see that in a bunch of different ways. Lee touched on the rebounding, but when Creighton inverts things and runs high-low action out of their secondary offense, he can just carve out space in the paint immediately. And there were one of the games against Marquette, Justin Lewis is covering him. Justin Lewis is 6'7", 230 whatever pounds, plays on the Chicago Bulls now, like is an NBA player, and is also developed and strong. And Kaluma was still able to knife in, carve out space in the paint, seal, and just present himself as a high-low option for Ryan Kalkbrenner to throw the ball to when he was the trail guy. But he can score out of the post and sort of like more deliberate, slower developing actions too. And this speaks some to the one-on-one scoring that he has. He kind of has a bunch of different tactics he can throw at guys. He can play with his back to the basket, shot fake, up and under. You add that in with his strength, and it's kind of a nasty combination. So I think there's a chance he could be a guy that maybe gives you some mid-range scoring at the next level, but we're not there yet. I just think some of the back to the basket game and then the face up one-on-one ISO mid-range shooting and scoring is maybe something to sort of build on. And if some of the other stuff comes online, then maybe it is something that will be a part of his package beyond playing with Uganda and beyond playing with Creighton for another season. He has impressive shot versatility, the movement shooting, not coming off down screens, but the relocations, the smooth release. The shot looks like he could repeat it anytime. And that's why, despite the bad percentages, I kind of buy it, because he's got at times deep range with a smooth release. Spencer would describe it as he shoots an easy ball. And so that's something that I see. Again, the percentages aren't there. And at the end of the day, if they're not there, then like that's the problem. But I think there are some reasons to buy into the shot. And then within that one-on-one mid-range shooting, there was one of the games I was watching. I think it was one of the UConn games. He did a Dirk Nowitzki-style one-legged fadeaway jumper. He can play at the nail. I even saw it definitely one of the UConn games from this past season. He threw in one like skyhook, almost skyhook-esque attempt. Maybe not a full skyhook, but he's got that kind of stuff. And then within that mid-range game, it's the shot fake that you talked about, the jab step and the rocker step combination. So jab, shot fake, go, right? Jab, shot fake, jab, then get to the shot. Playing off of that, I mean, the apex of this is what Kawhi Leonard does in the NBA. It's that just devastating, strong, face up, compact mid range game, and he can play off those tactics. Like if he gets the defender to bite on the shot fake or to bite on the jab, then he can just overwhelm them with his power and his athleticism and get downhill and get to the rim. There are times, however, where it does seem like he struggles to beat. If guys stay down on that fake, and he's so dependent on it, and that's actually something I'd like to talk about a little bit, but if guys stay down on that shot fake, there are times where he can't just necessarily just immediately off the first step, just get around players that are bigger and slower than him. So some of that sort of Jalen Johnson stuff from Duke a couple of years ago, where he has the functional strength and the functional athleticism, but maybe just not quite there in terms of first step burst. So again, he really needs that the shot fake and the rocker step to get to get into his bag a little bit. There are times where he is just so reliant on the shot fake, where it feels like a crutch, or he's just overly dependent on it. And when guys stay down, guys aren't focused on it, it doesn't do anything. Then he's caught the ball. Now the shot fake has created no advantage. Now he's holding on to the basketball. Now what do you go to next? Sometimes that's another shot fake, by the way. So again, I just think he could
add, he'll do it two or three times in a possession.
Yeah, and sometimes it's wildly effective. Sometimes it is. Sometimes he's able to use that to get to his shot or to get downhill or to the. I was watching the Uganda Nigeria game earlier today, and like he has this one possession where he's on the weak side wing. His teammate is probably like Ish Wainwright is posting up, and Kaluma cuts really nice off ball cut, like cuts into the middle of the lane. His teammate picks him out off the double. Kaluma shot fakes. It gets one rotating defender in the air. Then another backline defender comes up. He shot fakes again. So no dribbles by this point, right? Just cut from the wing into the middle of the paint. Shot fake. And then another teammate in the dunker spot was wide open. He just created – it was a really smart and heady play that where the shot fake really did kind of come into – worked out for him. So it's something he uses to attack closeouts, to get guys off balance one-on-one, or at other times where he's probably just a little too reliant with it. And I kind of like when he's a little more decisive and just get that ball in the air. And because he's shown impressive range at times. So I'm fascinated to see where that goes from here. The pick and roll creation is pretty rough at times. Didn't get a ton of pick and roll reps at Creighton. And he'll probably get even less next season, honestly. Like Ryan Nemhard's back, Trey Alexander's back, Baylor Shireman comes in. So, I am a little curious to see how that develops, where that goes this season. Doesn't look super comfortable with his handle, especially going to his left. I think he looks more comfortable in the pick and roll when he's able to get a switch and then can just get to that isolation mid-range game. He'll just pick at the mismatch or the matchup, whatever that is. With his ability to get downhill due to the size, due to the athleticism, he can open up these live dribble passing reads, drop offs to cutters or guys in the dunker spot, but the processing is slow. The touch, it just feels clunky. And, I think sort of a similar vibe and output when he tries to pass in other situations too, like when he's flashing to the nail against zone defense. But he can make the extra pass along the perimeter. He can make face up skip passes on spot up possessions, kick it from the corner to the opposite wing, what have you, for a spot up three. So I think he's not like a terrible passer. There are some intriguing flashes, but the live dribble aspects of it are not great. I will say it is fascinating to watch him play for Uganda, because he's getting some possessions to be a primary initiator. Not every time. Often he's used as a screener. He's used as to attack closeouts, pick and pops, whatever. But he is getting to play with the ball a little bit. And I'm glad he's getting those pick and roll reps, because I don't know how much it's going to come this season at Creighton. I'll be curious to see how Doug McDermott decides to feature him. He's at the least, he's aggressive in those situations, even if it's not always perfect. And he does show the ability to at times turn the corner, collapse defenses, and either finish or kick out. So I think the reps with the Ugandan national team are pretty important. And he's had some explosive scoring performances for them. Defensively, all I'll say is I don't like him as an off-ball defender. I think he has issues chasing guys around screens. Like the screen nav is just not fluid. It doesn't really seem to be there quite yet. So is there a lateral movement issue? I need to see more of that. When he's off ball, too heavy on the top side, guys can back cut him for layups. There have been two other things that I think I've picked up on a little bit. But the scoring from multiple levels of the court with that size, with that power, with that versatility, being able to play a couple different spots, being able to rebound, being able to perhaps guard a few spots is certainly intriguing. Kaluma, one of the best returning players in the country, hands down.
Yeah, no question. I think the roster construction, like you mentioned, will be interesting this year for Creighton and kind of how those, how that all gets divvied up.
Like, I think he's going to be, I think his efficiency is going to go up, right? It's just going to be, I don't think he's going to get a ton of reps to create out of ball screens. He's going to play a lot and get usage and score a lot because he's good. And that's an offense that puts up points. And he's going to get to play around with a lot of excellent ball handlers, passers, and shooting. In a five-man in Kalkbrenner that has gravity as a diver, that can post up, that can pass from the post, and has not shown the ability to pick and pop yet, but tried it a little bit this past season. So I just think he's in a very good situation to just be a monster attacking closeouts, cutting, playing in transition. I think his efficiency is going to jump way up. But yep. I'm not sure he's going to get some of those on-ball reps that maybe you might like to see from him, at least just to see what he can do, even if it's not actually in his bag, you know?
No, that's exactly right. And I agree with you on some of the screen nav stuff and some of the clunkiness that he can, you know, that can crop up at times with him. You know, I think the shooting, the defensive versatility and not just being kind of like a 4 and 5 type defender. He's going to have to show some of that.
Yeah.
But with his other qualities, like I do think if he has a good year, he'll probably be in the first round discussion at the very least. I think definitely.
I think the size and the athleticism are
exactly
just at a spot where I think you and I have a decent understanding of how and a lot of NBA scouts function, right? Or how front offices function, and they're going to see that. And it's just going to cause him to be coveted as a prospect. I will say you brought up his defense against McCormick in that Kansas game. The game that I watched, Uganda versus Nigeria, he guarded a lot of Chimezie Metu,
mm-hmm.
Who plays, I believe, for the Kings in the NBA, but is a, what, 6'10", 225, 230?
Yeah.
And
big fella.
Metu was awesome in this game and sort of got the better of Kaluma at times, but it's still good that Kaluma got reps against a 25-year-old NBA power forward center, and I think there's some value in that.
Totally. Well, that wraps up our group from today. We will be, as we said, releasing a Scoot Henderson deep dive, kind of, you know, solo prospect pod at some point over the next 5 to 10 days. So keep a lookout for that. If you have not yet, look to subscribe to BuzzBeat Plus because you will get episodes that never make it to the public feed. You will get episodes earlier than the public feed, and all sorts of other kind of cool features. So we appreciate everyone that listens, whether you're on BuzzBeat Plus or not, but take a look and see if it might be something that is worth your while. As always, thank you to everyone and all of our audience. Go Hornets. We'll see you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.